Hollidaysburg to Waynesburg, Erie to Reading, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, David Bradford is a direct descendant of William Bradford, the first governor of the Plymouth Colony, set up when the Pilgrims landed in America. He is here to talk about the principles of self-government they established. Dealing with a cancer diagnosis presents a variety of logistical challenges in addition to medical ones. Hope is here to help. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Barbara Titanish from Hope in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And there has been a lot of talk about a public option for health care, but why not have a personal option? Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania explains on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to David Bradford in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania Department of Health has once again tightened its mask mandate and enacted new rules on out-of-state travel. The state's health secretary, Dr. Rachel Levine, is now advising that residents who go to another state should either be tested for COVID-19 at least 72 hours before returning or quarantine for 2 weeks upon return. The guidance does not apply to those who work in another state or who provide medical care. Levine is also asking businesses to strictly enforce masking orders. According to the Center Square, the new guidelines are a result of a spike in COVID-19 cases, which have triggered a rise in hospitalizations. The Fairness Center has filed a class action lawsuit in federal court alleging that the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, or AFSCME, has continued to deduct dues from members' paychecks even after members have resigned their union membership. The Fairness Center has filed similar suits against other unions, resulting in settlements. A 2-year-old U.S. Supreme Court ruling, Janus v. AFSCME, held it unconstitutional for workers to be required to join and pay dues to a public sector labor union as a condition of employment. Some unions have sought to get around the ruling by holding members captive until they can leave during a so-called escape window, usually at the end of a years-long contract. Pennsylvania school districts have received $523.8 million in federal CARES Act funding to assist in dealing with expenses associated with the COVID-19 pandemic. According to the Allegheny Institute in Pittsburgh, most districts spent some portion of their allocation on salaries and/or benefits, mostly for instructional personnel. Spending on supplies has been mostly used for electronic equipment and online textbooks, with the balance being used for cleaning products and protective gear. You can read the entire report at AlleghenyInstitute.org. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. When the Pilgrims first landed in America, they had to decide how to govern themselves. Thus, Plymouth Colony was built on a foundation of God-given equal rights. David Bradford is a direct descendant of William Bradford, who was the first governor of the Plymouth Colony. He is here to talk about its enduring importance. David, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. David, it is now Thanksgiving time, and the reason why we celebrate this holiday, among others, is because the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock and formed the colony, the first colony here in America. William Bradford, you are a descendant of his, was the first governor of that colony. So tell us a little bit about why those first colonists came here and the principles upon which they set up that very first colony.
It's a great story of the Pilgrims' history, and unfortunately, too many people aren't really that well informed of it. I know growing up, I went to a very good school in Michigan, and I just learned basically two things about the Pilgrims. One, they escaped England to seek religious freedom, and then number two, they suffered a very difficult first winter and served as an inspiration to others, period. That was the extent of what we learned about the Pilgrims. And of course, Thanksgiving, the holiday that they celebrate, that's been an attempt to sort of link us back to our roots and what the Pilgrims were really about. And the thing that I think is so important for people to understand is that the Pilgrims were an extremely religiously motivated people. They became very renowned even in their lifetime, which I was surprised to learn, because I always thought that I was came later. They just were, you know, they wanted to get out of England and they were being persecuted and this sort of thing. But I also learned that they went to Holland for 12 years, which I thought they escaped England and came right to America. And what were they doing in Holland? You know, they had received and achieved their religious liberty by going to Holland. So why did they leave Holland? And so it just raised so many questions. And of course, being a direct descendant of Governor Bradford, I was very, very interested in learning more about what we know about the Pilgrims and what they were all about. And so it was very, very important to me to really look into what Bradford wrote. And I wanted to share his history in his own words. When you think about his diary, which is where we learn most of what we know about the early colony, his firsthand account, he and Governor Winslow, or Edward Winslow's accounts, are the basis of most firsthand information that we know. And one of the things that is so important for us to understand is that he wrote, when he wrote this, he shared it as a historian, and he wrote in third person. And it was very hard, even me wanting to understand this, I found it very difficult to understand. It was only when I was able to sit down and I wanted to transcribe it in the first person, and I started taking his account and putting it into, instead of they and them, it was I and we, and I started sharing it as if I was William Bradford speaking, and it came alive, and it just became so powerful when you realize what he thought was important to share with other people. And he took the time to write it down and make sure he could pass that on to the next generation. I just felt an obligation to be the mouthpiece for Governor Bradford and be able to share his history, because it is so important to our foundation of our country. There's a direct connection between what the Pilgrims, they're like the seed or the DNA that was planted, that became and grew into the American, what it means to be an American.
Talk for a minute or so, if you will, about the principles that that colony was founded on and the principles that Governor Bradford and those early colonists established that ultimately became the bedrock for our entire national existence.
The basis and foundation of what they attempted to do was they were entirely intent on living out the New Testament church in their world. And they were committed to that fully, completely, 100%, their entire... They viewed the providence of God and what they should do, how they should live, was to model it after what the scripture says. And that's one of the things that most people have a hard time quite relating to, because they embodied faith. Like I said, they were renowned for it in their own time. So their foundation was to come here and to preach the gospel, basically, to the new world. That was one of their four motivations that Bradford actually wrote down. He actually enumerated them. He said, you know, when they left Holland, number one, number two, number three, and he said last but not least was the propagating of the gospel to the new world. So that was a very important foundational principle, was faith. And the other foundational principle was this idea of liberty and freedom. It was important that individual freedom was an individual liberty. It wasn't necessarily group liberty, but each person was accountable to God and accountable to living out the life that God had placed before them. And that was a primary motivation for their colony, how they treated their neighbors. This wonderful relationship they had with the Wampanoag Indians is lost on most Americans. They figure, they're being told anyway today, that the Native American and indigenous people and the Pilgrims just came to wipe them out, steal their land, and genocide was their motivation. And that's not true at all. I mean, the treaty that they established in the first spring after they had arrived, when they first met the Pokanoket tribe, it was a treaty that they entered into that lasted over half a century. And it's the only treaty that has survived the lifetime of the two primary people who entered into that agreement. That treaty lasted the lifetime of the Massasoit Assiniboine on the on the Okanoka side, and Bradford and Winslow and Governor Carver, they all, it was over half a century, which is unique in American history.
Now, speaking of American history, unfortunately, a lot of it is not taught in public schools, and we've had various projects that have certainly distorted it. In an effort to set the record straight, you have established the 1620 experience. Tell us what that is and why it's important.
The 1620 experience is a series of episodes, 13 different episodes of 30 minutes apiece that actually go into and teach the history of the Pilgrims and really brings the truth versus the sort of the lie that we're being exposed to today. And we're doing this in not just in a lecture format or a video format, but we're trying to make it a multi-platform so it can be on social media. And these programs will be set up as webinars where people can attend, and we'll have video of showing and demonstrating and engaging people in the true history of the Pilgrims and this relationship with the Wampanoag Nation. And people can come and learn about it, but then also interact with myself and my son, who is also an educator and teaches this. So it's a wonderful platform for reaching out to that 12 to 25-year-old generation that really needs a good grounding and foundation in our American history, but also our founding history, which is the Pilgrim history that leads to the founding of our country.
And David, give us the website where folks can go to access the experience.
It's 1620experience.com. 1620, capital E-X, experience.com.
And we have been talking with David Bradford, a direct descendant of Governor William Bradford, who was one of the first individuals, along with a whole group of pilgrims, to land in this country and set up what ultimately became our national holiday that we're celebrating this week. And so we encourage you to go to the 1620experience.com. David Bradford. David, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
A cancer diagnosis affects not only the patient, but also those in his or her family, and disrupts daily routines. Many need help dealing with those challenges, which is why HOPE was founded. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation learns more from Barbara Titanish of HOPE. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Barb, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Thank you for having me.
HOPE is an organization that works with people and families who are experiencing cancer. What was the inspiration for the founding of an organization, HOPE?
My dear friend was diagnosed with cancer in 1992, and when she said at that time I was directionally challenged, because when so many of her friends went running out, and she knew that it wasn't because they didn't love her, it was that they didn't know what to say mm-hmm. or what to do. For me, from the age of 14 on in my family, someone was living or dying with cancer. In fact, just 3 months before Jeanette was diagnosed, my brother had just finished his treatment at age 23, he was. So for me, it was only natural to go marching in, as she said, with my flip chart. And I had organized who was going to drive her, who was going to do the meals, who was doing the laundry, who was taking the kids here. And I had everything organized.
From a family perspective, I know from working with families with all kinds of physical and health challenges, it doesn't just happen with the person who acquires the challenge. It happens to the whole family. Can you talk a little bit about that dynamic?
And that's one of the things that HOPE does. We treat the whole family. We're there for the whole family. And so, like, we're always there to talk to whoever needs us. We make sure that meals are being in. If it's the mother, we're making sure there's meals in the home. If it's the children, we're making sure that their life tries to stay as regular as it can be. In fact, we founded a support group called Kids Under Construction to help the children of cancer patients deal with what's happening within the family. So it isn't just the cancer patient. It's the entire family that's impacted by that diagnosis.
And in this universe, It also happens to the circle of people around, as you mentioned, friends of the family, friends of the individual. They, after a while, don't know what to say. They feel for the person and the family, but they come in and they don't know how to help. So they kind of disappear. They fall to the wayside.
Yeah.
Sometimes the person doesn't need something to be said that's going to make them feel better. Sometimes it's just knowing that there's a hug there and that kind of thing. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, that's one of the things when a cancer patient registers with us and we see them for the first time, we tell them, you just joined a large family. And like any family, you might not get along with some in the family, but others will be there. So we believe in the other cancer patients supporting and helping also. That's why our support groups are there. But we try to help and let them know. We send out gift cards on a regular basis to the patients just to let them know. Sometimes it's a quilt that comes to them. Sometimes it's all different types of care packages. But just to be able to walk out to that mailbox and open it up and get something, it just says, someone's thinking of you today. Someone's giving you love and hugs today. This virus has created the issue of not being able to be there to hug our families. But we're constantly letting them know we're here and we will be with you during this whole journey. And we will do as much or as little as they want. But they have to know we're here.
Yeah, this is something, too, that you can't plan for, that it is an unexpected journey. And it just brings such challenge. In your literature, you talk about exhausting emotional challenges and financial burdens. So how do you ease that journey?
We have a food pantry. And that food pantry, we had gotten special exception through the state stay open because it was healthier for families to come to us than it would be to go in the grocery store. And we took all the precautions necessary. But we help if they get $200 to $300 worth of groceries from us, then they're able to put that on a bill and they're able to use that money in a different direction. So we're constantly looking at ways that we can help the people that way, just alleviating the stress of where the groceries and the food and that coming from helps tremendously. We have homemade prepared meals so that instead of having to prepare a meal, the loved one can just take it home, pop it in the oven, and take a nap. So we're always looking for different ways to be able to help relieve the stress. It has been hard for us to be able to donate as much as we normally do because our fundraisers were drastically cut.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Barb Titanish, the president of an organization called HOPE, an organization that works with individuals and families dealing with cancer. So the organization name, Barb, HOPE, tell us what the acronym stands for and some of what you do.
It stands for hopeforcancerfamilies.org. And what we do is we have a library. When COVID isn't in existence, we help with transportation. We do a kids group called KUC that helps children understand what their family is dealing with that diagnosis of cancer. We have provided a scholarship in my girlfriend, Jeanette, my co-founder's name, and we've awarded over 80 scholarships to date. We run a regular support group, and then we have a food pantry.
Barb, this has to be a labor of love, but it's also got to be a very draining kind of organization in that there's just so much need and so much pain out there. At the end of the day, how do you know you're making a difference?
Little things. Patients just reaching out and said, thank you. I couldn't have done this today if it wouldn't have been for you. Actually, I attended a funeral, and at that funeral, I'm sitting there thinking, oh, I wish we could have done more. And the loved one stood up and said, we never would have made it without the help of HOPE. And they talked about what all we had done for them. And it's the little things that we all take for granted that mean the most to the patients. And so at the end of the night, I think about back on those and the family members that I have been honored to go this journey with.
There's so much more to your organization than we have time to talk about, with the programming, with the making a difference, with what's available to people who are experiencing cancer in their family. If people want to learn more about HOPE, how can they find you? Where can they find you?
Well, they can go to our webpage. It's called hopelifeline.org. And if they have more questions, there's an info section that they can write questions to me, and I'll get back to them and call and chat with them and help in any way that we can.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Barb Titanish, the president of HOPE. And we're at a time of the year where the holiday season is coming and these kinds of things just get magnified when people around are celebrating the joy and the richness that they have. So don't forget people who you know, again, that touch of the hand, the hug, even if it's just an emotional hug, let them know that you're still there. Don't feel like you can't help if you can't fix it. So, Barb, thank you for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio Program, and good luck with your hard work.
Thank you so much for letting me share the story of HOPE.
Back to you, Loman.
The current session of the Pennsylvania legislature is coming to an end, with much work on improving access to health care rolling over to the new session, which will begin in January. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
What do Americans really want when it comes to health care? We want to see the doctor of our choice conveniently and affordably. We want access to the most appropriate treatments. We want access to good insurance that meets our needs at an affordable rate. We want to know how much our care will cost up front before we pay for it. And we want safety nets that protect the vulnerable. How can we achieve those goals? The best way is to remove barriers. Barriers between patients and medical professionals, between patients and needed therapies, and between inventors and life-saving medical breakthroughs. Well, throughout the 2020 campaign cycle, we have heard a great deal of discussion about a public option. And while there is no single cure for what ails our healthcare, we know that a government takeover of our system would make things worse. Federal mandates have decreased the number of options available to those who need them. Instead, Americans for Prosperity is proposing an alternative to the public option, a personal option, a set of sensible, principled reforms that would make healthcare better, more affordable, and more accessible. We've supported opening health reimbursement accounts by supporting Increasing Health Coverage Through HRAs Act, sponsored by Representative Dan Bishop of North Carolina and co-sponsored by PA Congressman Lloyd Smucker. And we've endorsed legislation that would provide for new and improved health savings accounts by supporting the Health Savings Accounts for All Act, sponsored by Senator Paul of Kentucky, which would reduce regulatory barriers to HSAs and allow more Americans to contribute to them. We've called on Congress to expand personal health care choices and are regularly communicating with the members of our delegation to ensure they know the merits of these ideas and how their impact would be immediate and beneficial for Pennsylvanians from Pittsburgh to Potter to Philadelphia. But we also know that healthcare can be reimagined at the state level through passing laws that will impact scope of practice, telemedicine, and CRNA title designation. Each of these reforms would expand healthcare options by way of care, providers, and services to better serve our patients. As we conclude this 2019-2020 legislative session, an inventory of what was accomplished is critical to know what must be introduced for the 2021-2022 session. By passing scope of practice for nurse practitioners, we would expand the ability of these providers to meet the primary care needs of Pennsylvanians, including in our 211 federally defined healthcare provider shortage areas, meaning there are 211 populations in our state where there is less than one primary care provider per 3,500 people. Senate Bill 25, sponsored by Senator Bartolotta, passed with 88% support in the Senate. For the first time in Pennsylvania's history, the House version, House Bill 100, sponsored by Representative Jesse Topper, passed out of the House Professional Licensure Committee. This legislation will be something we push for reintroduction at the top of the year. Empowering healthcare providers to practice telehealth has enabled the delivery of essential care to families at home throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. Senate Bill 857, which would have allowed healthcare practitioners in other states to deliver remote telehealth to PA patients, was passed with bipartisan support but was vetoed by the governor. Ensuring this is made permanent post-pandemic by reintroducing the legislation next session is something we'll encourage during the year's first quarter. We must also push for nurse anesthetists, many of whom have operated the ventilators that have provided life-saving support to COVID-19 patients, to receive proper title designation so that we can increase our supply of providers who can fill those crucial, highly skilled roles in our hospitals. By passing Senator Gordner's Senate Bill 325, CRNAs would receive proper legal title and Pennsylvania would be better positioned to attract these highly qualified practitioners to serve our state's growing healthcare needs. While there has been a great deal clarified throughout the pandemic, one point might trump all others. Access to quality healthcare is more important than ever. We must continue to embrace and support the reforms that are proven to expand the supply of better care at a lower cost. We remain committed to doing this throughout the upcoming legislative session and hope you'll come alongside in this pursuit. I am Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity. You can find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WQZS-FM in Myersdale, WJUN-AM in Mexico, along with WMSS-FM in Middletown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.